Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 144 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, even though it's a cyclocross show, we're going to talk about cyclocross stars, which means we're going to talk a little bit about road. And if you're going to talk about road, I need a road racing expert, somebody who's coughing in the background, somebody who is up on the rumors, the inside, the hot takes, the innuendo, who knows the inside of the Peloton like the back of his hand. And that would be the super rookie, Tim Hayes. Tim, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for stepping out of the Slow Ride Podcast green room and joining me over here on Cyclocross Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really like what you did with the place. Yeah. So nice. Yeah, it's good to get outside of the green room a little bit. And I really appreciate being labeled an expert. Regular listeners of the podcast know that I'm clearly the expert on the show.
Oh yeah. No, I mean it shines through that where I want to go for my in-depth road cycling knowledge about the machinations in the Peloton, the drafting, the putting people in the gutter, all those things that you guys talk about in road racing, the tactics, how radios work. You know, I know you're the guy that I want to go to.
Well, thanks for that. I got really excited when you texted me and said you wanted me on the show because you had some games that you wanted to play, you know, and yeah, you needed my help. But I mean, this is great. It's very exciting. And okay, it was such a big week of racing, and I felt like it was almost like a giant I told you so moment for you, right? For you and what you represent in American cyclocross and kind of that underground cyclocross fan. It wasn't really a I told you so moment, I think, for the cycling aficionados of Denmark and Belgium with what happened with Vanderpool's win at Amstel Gold, but it's, you know, here, all of a sudden, boy, did the wildfire come out on Twitter.
It's right. And social media. It's something that, you know, we see how we're kind of isolated in our tribes in cycling, in that for me and people who love cyclocross and even mountain biking, we're like, well, of course Mathieu van der Poel is going to do awesome. The guy's a phenom. He's a, you know, one in a generation rider. But, you know, then you realize, well, there's still this whole community, a larger community of road racing fans that may know the name, but are going to discount any performance from this guy because he's just a cyclocross racer. You know, he's like, you know, hey, Stibar's done okay. You know, Lars Boom, there's a world champ. What has he done? So, you know, Wout van Aert, oh, he was the guy we were supposed to be watching, this big cyclocross star. Where's he been? So, you know, you see like this almost, dare I say, patronizing view of him to start out with. You know, you look at before Amstel even started and they were like, oh, well, I mean, come on. The guy's not going to, you know, do well in this race.
I mean, look at his team. He couldn't even get into Paris-Roubaix.
You need a big team. Right. He wasn't even invited to Paris-Roubaix. And don't you need a big train? Don't you need to be like Pataki and have like a whole sprint train? Isn't that how road racing works?
Well, you're a man for our heart over at the Slow Ride Podcast, bringing up Ali Jet Pataki. Oh, we could talk about that Brico helmet forever as well. But Bill, I think that you hit the nail on the head, right? There's so many different avenues to talk about with Mathieu van der Poel. So much of it patronizing, so much of it, but he's still not good enough. I mean, I've had countless conversations with friends of mine, good friends of mine on road rides about this storm that is coming, right? This perfect storm that is coming of Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel. Wout van Aert had his coming out party last year when he fell on the side of the climb at Strada Bianchi. And people are like, oh, that's cool. And you're like, yeah, that's just the hors d'oeuvres of what's coming. There's this whole other guy that dusts Wout van Aert in cyclocross races. And you have no idea. And they're like, well, he's not going to be that good. And then he sticks with this second division team. Can't even get invites to every race. And then does the unspeakable at Flanders. And then does the unspeakable times two at Amstel and takes the win.
Yeah, with the sprint over all of these guys like a week before as well. Right?
Oh, yeah.
In the Peels race.
Yeah, and over Michael Matthews, another friend of the pod.
Yeah.
So there's so much, Bill, to get into. You know me. I love to just take over shows. So I'm just gonna sit back and let you steer.
No, that's why you're here.
Matthew Vanderpool Avenue.
The way this works, and I always get, you know, people are like, hey, I really like it because you just let your guests talk and you sort of hang back. You know, when we do more of the panel ones, I may like talk too much, but you're here to be the super rookie.
So, all right. So let's get started.
Yeah. And here's what I did. You know, both of us are fans of other podcasts. So I borrowed this concept from another sports podcast. I can't even remember which one it was because they were all stealing it from each other.
But it's the Bill Simmons podcast.
Well, it was Bill Simmons, but I feel like Bill Simmons took it from somebody else.
Probably.
Yeah. So it's fair game for us too. We're the only ones doing it in cycling. And the name of the game is Blame Pie.
Yeah.
Right? So you have your pie. What kind of pie do you have?
I'm a big fan of just a good old classic American apple pie.
Mm, okay.
Nice graham cracker crust. You're not a fan?
No, that's good. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I specifically have a winterberry pie from Sol at Acme Pie. That's Ooh. What I have. That's going to be my blame pie.
I like this pie way better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are these the pies that you can win at the garage races?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Big cycling supporter and sponsor, Sol Schott, Acme Pie, just opened his own brick and mortar shop. Yeah. So
cool. All right. Let's get that Acme Pie.
And the point of this game, or the objective here, is that we are going to look at this Amstel race and what happened in it. And we're gonna break it down because, you know, we're talking to a lot of cyclocross people who I'm sure since Vanderpool was in it and Wout was in it that they were paying attention, and it's really the only show in town right now. But not everybody may have watched this race. So first off, what we would say is go sign up to Flow Bikes. You know, I'm sure it's on YouTube now, but regardless, go do that and then go watch the replay of this race. If you really, you know, there's what I think Vanderpool put in a big attack with about 40K left. That's worth seeing. But after that, really, you know, at least see the last 20K of this race.
Well, you definitely want to see it 45K when Peter Sagan gets dropped.
Yes.
that's the cherry on the top of the pie a la mode,
yeah,
is the whole Peter Sagan, does he know who Matthew Vanderpool is narrative?
Yeah.
Which is so good.
He may not, because who knows if he even looked at the result.
Well, Mitch Docker, when he was on the pod, believed that Peter Sagan didn't know who Matthew Vanderpool is, just because that's his personality.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, it wasn't a mental game that Sagan is playing. Like, he honestly just didn't know because he's in his own world.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of, and this is just, I've had a lot of basketball references and they're not going to stop, but Clay Matthews for the Golden State Warriors, same way. He'll go and just do these insane things during games, like shoot these threes at like the time where you're like, oh geez, what are you? And you know, they go in and he's like this great player. They say, he may not even know what team they're playing or if it's the playoffs.
Yeah.
He's just out there to play. And that's kind of how I see Sagan and maybe even Vanderpool to an extent, where it's like, this is just what they're just out there having fun, doing their thing.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that's where, so I just wanted to mention the Sagan thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's just an underlying narrative of this whole thing. Like, that's what's so great about the Matthew Vanderpool story. And we're on like the front row. It's kind of like you telling me about cool bands before they get big. And then I like kind of can act cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
10 seconds.
You came strong on the private Twitter today with the Bruce Hornsby. So, you know, kudos there.
All right, let's get to Blame Pie. Why don't you
before we do this, maybe we should take a step back and if you don't mind, maybe just sort of take us through that last, just so people know what we're placing this blame on. What actually the breakdown of this race? I mean, the you know, 10, yeah, what was so, it, 7 kilometers out, and it was a 55-second gap, you know, and just give us the players here with Fuslong and Alphaville out there. I call him Alphaville, yeah, out front, and, you know, just what the gaps are and who's in this race.
Yeah, so more or less what you had was you had Fuslong and Alaphilippe, the two of them off the front with about a 40-second published gap is what, you know, the time clock was saying. There's a lot of question on if that was a real time gap, but they had 40 seconds over, I believe it was Kiwakowski and, oh, I don't
know. Was it Clark?
No, it wasn't. Clark, because Clark was just sitting on Matthew Vanderpoel's wheel forever. Okay. Maybe it was Bardet or Trentin. It didn't matter.
Trenton.
There was a second.
It was Trenton.
Trenton. Yeah. Thank you. So there was three groups in play here. You had the two in the lead, Fuglsang and Alaphilippe, going to the line. And then we'll talk about that. Then you had Trentin and Kiwakowski about 20 seconds back to 30 seconds back with 4K to go. And then you had another 10 to 15 seconds back, a Matthew Vanderpoel-led train, peloton of maybe, what, 15 riders? I mean, and this include like Michael Matthews, Impe, Roy Costa was there. They were there and they were slowly getting dropped off. And then you had Bardet, Bauke Mollema was also around. So you had Vanderpoel putting the hurt on the remaining contestants. And then cat and mouse game started with about, what, 3K to go? Fuglsang started attacking.
Yeah.
Alaphilippe, because he knew that he was not going to beat Alaphilippe in a sprint. And little guy was very quick to point out to me that it was kind of the first time we saw Fuglsang going all in for the win and not being happy with a podium, right?
Yeah.
And he still got third, but he kind of, I don't want to say screwed over Alaphilippe, but he wasn't there to let Alaphilippe win. He wasn't going to help Alaphilippe because Alaphilippe was the better sprinter.
It was, and it's also was this the terrain. Like, we used to have the Amstel race, which ended on this epic climb, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the, was it the Kahlberg that it actually finished on? But it was like a finish. It was like this 3K finish to the end that was uphill the whole way. Completely different race. Now, you know, they're getting a little criticism because they've dumbed down the course so much that it's kind of boring. And you could see that with Fuglsang attacking, that he's attacking on just these dead, flat, pancake flat roads. And it doesn't take much for Alphaville to just sort of scoot up there. I'm going to take the blame for the mispronunciations on this, Tim. I'm just taking the heat off you. You know, it was nothing for him to get right up there on the wheel and like just cover every move, every attack.
Yeah, and you were just like, okay, that, you know, but they have enough of a gap that this isn't going to bother. And then you had Kiwakowski, who, you know, it's kind of a, everybody likes Kiwakowski. I don't know anybody that doesn't like him. He's a fun racer to watch. He represented the World Championship jersey well when he wore it prior to the Sagan reign, but he was up there bringing it. And then eventually Kiwakowski catches them with what, 200 meters to go, 250 meters to go, and blows past them. And for a second you're like, Kiwakowski's gonna win this, but you look in the background and you see Vanderpoel. Now, at up until this point, Vanderpoel was on the front of the group, but it did look like he got like second wheel there for a little bit as the rest of the group realized that there was a chance that he could win, or that they could win in a sprint. And then Vanderpoel just launched, like the gates of hell opened up and the sprint of the century came, and he beats Fuglsang. And then kind old Simon Clark rode the wheel of Vanderpoel the entire time to like the most gratuitous second place finish of all time. And it was so great to see, because he was like the first to congratulate Vanderpoel. Like, oh, thanks,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. He's got his, just hand on the back and
But there's clearly a lot of blame here on what happened to let Matthew Vanderpoel win.
Right. So,
and that's what we need to dissect.
To break this down a little, just so people understand just the absurdity of this, is that 7.5 kilometers out, you know, and again, we can back to the Vanderpool group, 55 seconds to the leaders. So almost a minute under 10K, you know, and if you grew up listening to Paul and Phil, you would know like, what,
10
like
seconds 10, per kilometer,
10 seconds per kilometer. That's kind of the conventional wisdom. So we are definitely right up on that, but that takes you to the finish line. I mean, it's almost impossible to shut that down. Even better than that, here's where the numbers really get insane. With 1.5 kilometers left, they are still 35 seconds back.
Yeah. And that's that. I don't know how accurate that is, but it's still, didn't, 20 to 35.
Didn't Cosmo try to break this down? I haven't looked at what he put out there.
I haven't seen that. I'm waiting for the expert. He's the real expert.
Have said that it was pretty on point.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
That's good to know. He is the expert here.
Yeah. And so that's, and then they just keep coming. And the thing is that Vanderpool isn't at this point sitting in, as you said, he's driving the train.
Oh yeah.
And he's pulling back the leaders. And again, conventional wisdom here is right. You have a sprint at the end of a big race. If you're second, third wheel, you can just sort of take that free ride behind Vanderpool and then come around in the last, 100, 200 meters and throw your hands up and take the win. But he's turning around after that 200 meters, staring at those guys to see if anybody's going. And again, at that point in road tactics, you think they're kind of soft pedaling a little. You know, they're going hard, but they haven't put in the full. But he's still pulling away while he's doing that. He's like weaving across the road, looking behind him, and they still are like struggling to stay on his wheel.
Well, and that's where the whole setup, like he's looking for the help.
Yeah.
But he still, like, he did most of the work, but it should be pointed out that he was also pretty smart. Like, he was able to get out of the wind for maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like
he did. He dove over and sort of used the suckers that, and we'll get into our blame pie, which were still sitting out there going, what the hell's going on? And kind of, was able to duck in behind them before his final push.
Yeah. I mean, he sat behind Fuglsang, no one could come around him. And that finishing 7K. I mean, but Bill, there's an Acme pie there, and we need to split this up because there's a lot of blame to go around.
For sure. So now that we know what the race is, the point of the blame pie is that the astounding performance by Matthew Vanderpool aside, it has to go. It can't go without saying that he had help in this. And that's where the blame pie comes in. So we need to break down who is responsible for allowing this to happen. Where does the blame go? How many pieces of this blame pie do you give to different factors? And I'm going to let you go first, Tim. What's your first piece of blame pie in this?
The first piece for me is the is Peter Sagan and the Bora Hansgrohe team. They definitely deserve a little smidge of this pie, maybe like 5%. The fact that they weren't there, that Sagan wasn't there to keep Matthew Vanderpool in line, right? Because of that, it kind of, to me, this opens up the opportunity for this to even happen. Sagan needs to come in with the smackdown that he is, because he's the force of cycling, and the throne is being taken away from him, and he failed to do that. And so that right there is immediately kind of this existential piece of the blame pie that needs to be just mentioned.
My first piece of blame pie is kind of along the same lines, because right about when Sagan is dropping out of the race, getting dropped and eventually dropping out, Vanderpool, somewhere around 40K to go, decides, I'm attacking. And I think it was a Kreuzberg, and goes all in. Like, this is the move. I'm going to get out, and then it's going to be, I'm taking off from here, and I'm just going to ride solo for the next 40K. See you guys later. Go talk to Wout. He'll tell you how this goes. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And he gets pulled back. And after he gets pulled back, he doesn't look good.
No, I thought the fork was in him because they go to the next climb and he's, you know, he's 10, 15 wheels back.
And that is piece of blame pie number one, and that will never happen again, is that now they know. If that group of riders saw that again and saw him struggling off the back, they would have been going full gas to get rid of him there and just get him out of the way instead of assuming that he was already done for the day.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's good.
All right.
There's another very small piece of blame pie that I need to.
Yeah, I mean this is the person who may be on the keto diet but doesn't want to seem lame, so they're just going to have that little sliver.
And I'm doing this a little bit for co-host the Slow Ride Pod, but for little guy, I mean Fuglsang, I think doesn't really deserve any, like, a very large piece of the blame pie here, because he played the race as he should have, right? All too often, we have seen racers that get happy with just being on the podium, as I mentioned before, Hincapie at Paris-Roubaix, right? Like, I'm not even going to try to out-sprint Tom Boonen, and I'm happy with fourth place or whatever. The way that he tried to attack, he tried to do all he could to get away from Alaphilippe, and he just couldn't, but he wasn't willing to do the work for Alaphilippe to take the win. And I like that. That makes bike racing more exciting. So therefore, it's not really like he gets a little bit of blame because sure, it allowed Vanderpool to come take this win. But if it wasn't for Fuglsang, we wouldn't be so excited about this race. So it's almost like he baked the pie.
Ooh, all right. Well, so, if he baked it, I think that he still deserves at least
a taste.
I may give a full piece plus the remaining piece that you just cut off there, that little sliver, and give it to Fuglsang, who relied too much and blamed his own little blame pie, the reports he was getting from the car and his race radio on that information being wrong.
That was a little disappointing. It's like, hey man, you still got third. You played it the way you should have. Just embrace it.
But and you know, if you don't know, if people listening don't know, what happened was he was later said, well, we didn't realize how close that group was. We were getting incorrect gaps from the car, and therefore, if I had known they were closer, I wouldn't have played it out like it played it out. But what you just said, Tim, I mean, he's with one of the best sprinters in the world. How do you play that differently?
Exactly.
So,
I mean, that's why, you know, that's why I don't think he deserves as big of a piece as, you know, there's two more that are coming up to my mind right away that are bigger pieces. Like one's a fair amount of the piece. That's Alaphilippe, right? Kind of an embarrassing performance for the guy that, you know, almost seemed primed to take over the throne from Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
And as a popular cyclist, he looks good. He's got like the personality. And then, I mean, I was surprised to find out he got fourth when I was looking at the results later.
Right.
Right. Like he just kind of disappeared and you're just like, oh man, like he was looking for a hole to go dig a hole. Like he wanted to go get as far away from all video as possible because he should have won that race. He could have gone from much further out and won over, you know, even Vanderpool coming from behind. So he gets the majority of the pie, the biggest slice.
I will say, and maybe this is the rest of your pie as well, but for my next, this is going to be an enormous chunk. This is another quarter size chunk. This pie may be more than 100%. I'm not sure how many pieces I've given away so far, but I think a really, really big piece of this blame pie is not necessarily all on the shoulders of Alaphilippe. I mean, he was out there. He had a chance to win. Where are the rest of the New York Yankees?
Yeah.
Where is the rest of this formerly known as Quickstep team? Why aren't they in that chase group? Why aren't they controlling that group? Why aren't they doing, you know, we saw, you know, of all things, EF do it a couple weeks ago, just disrupt, not even with their pink jerseys, but just disrupt the chase and get in the way and slow down the chase. You know, all we hear about is the Wolf Pack. Where were they?
Gilbert was the closest, and he was a minute down.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, where were they? They deserve a mighty helping. But they did their job. They got Alaphilippe to where he needed to be to win the race.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Alaphilippe, but open wide. There's a lot of pie coming to you, because that was his to win, and it was taken from him by our future overlord, Matthew Vanderpool. I've got another piece for you.
Yeah.
The organizers, the race organizers. Ooh. Get a decent portion here.
Okay.
For
let's hear
twofold. One, allowing Matthew Vanderpool to show up to race. Cause remember, he's not a World Tour team, so he doesn't have his team doesn't have to go. Granted, there's no way they're not going to have, their national champion, the Netherlands national champion show up to race this race. But, and secondly, like you mentioned, the course redesign, right? That they hit the circuit, but the last time they do the circuit, they kind of take this right-hand turn to go on some other golf cart path that avoids the Kalberg. So it seemed a little bit, you know, more windy, a little more of a chance for him to come close that gap a lot more than what was there previously.
Did you think that they were trying to set up a sprinter's race from this? I mean, that's never been sort of the makeup of this race.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It made for a way cooler race.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing too. And that's, you know, that's something that we always preach in cyclocross, is that people want to like talk about, oh, that wasn't a very exciting track, or, you know, and that kind of thing. And I'm always like, well, it's not the track that makes the race. It's the racers. You know, it's what they're going to do with the conditions they're given. And in this instance, you know, you can ask for anything better.
Yeah. No, it was good. Oh God, it was so good. So do you have any more pie to
I
give?
Do.
I'm out of pie. So.
I do. I have to give, you know, and I know, you know, we're a day after Dingus Day, so I don't wanna give Kwiatkowski too much of the blame pie here. But I think that possibly if he were to rethink this, a little impatient, maybe, in that he's a known entity too, great sprinter. If he sees that group behind, maybe within that last K, sort of rejoins that group instead of just blowing himself out at the front, he's got a chance to sit in behind Vanderpool.
So almost he should have done the math to see like, oh, they're going to get close enough that I can then... I don't know. He deserves some pie, sure, because he didn't win. Like every racer there, except
this is all 2020 hindsight, but for sure.
I thought for a second that Kwiatkowski thought that he was going to win. I thought for a second Kwiatkowski was going to win. Like when he caught him and just went straight to the front. So, yeah, he deserves a little. Do you have any more to give out?
I do.
Okay.
Bob Jungles was not in this race, correct?
No.
He did not show up. There was no Luxembourg national champ in this race. So yeah. I think you have to give a little bit of the blame pie to the white bibs. Because there's no excuse now. That was the excuse. That was the retcon excuse for the white bibs. No Bob Jungles, no confusion, little blame pie.
The white bibs were great, though. Because you could always see from the helicopter shots where Matthew Vanderpool was. And the we talked about on the slow ride, but the Clark Kent phone booth change to the black bibs.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I don't even know when that happened.
Look, and the thing is, if anybody can pull this off, he can. That's the thing. So, yeah.
That was so good. So, I have to ask you about Matthew Vanderpool, because you have a very unique insight. Right. And maybe we could talk a little bit more later about the, you know, what does he do next in his career and kind of that whole narrative that's now being developed.
Yeah.
But is his arrival to the mountain bike scene, I think you've touched on it before in the past, but I want, you know, the first time you saw him at a UCI mountain bike race that you were covering over in Europe, and you had a pretty good Twitter post that's gained a little bit of traction that was just like the greatest like read from like that it happened in front of you about a sponsorship.
Yeah.
So I'd like to touch on both because I love these stories. So if you could, and especially when Matthew Vanderpool recognized you, like that whole buildup to me is just fantastic.
Well, yeah. So, you know, covering cyclocross and especially having the opportunity to see World Cups, and especially the great thing, and this is what, you know, some of our European friends don't realize, or if they do, maybe a little jealous, is that when we get these cyclocross stars in the US, they're not as big as stars as they are in Belgium. So the access is so much greater and it gets you an opportunity to really get in and know these guys. So, you know, Wout Van Aert, when he was coming over as a kid, you know, and racing Cross Vegas, was able to sit down and talk to him and sort of, you know, without 100 other reporters or photographers around. And the same with Vanderpool, you know, was able to sort of get this early relationship while he was still, I mean, huge world champion already, you know, in coming up the ranks. But, you know, it's still such a small niche sport that it's not as, he's not as well known. And the crazy thing is that when he wanted to race mountain bikes, nobody knew who he was on the mountain bike scene. It's just an insular, you know, it's almost, I would say that they even know him better on the road, since road and cyclocross are really, you know, closer than you would think. Cyclocross, since it's on the dirt, it'd be closer to mountain biking, but it's really a road sport. I mean, those two are really, you know, and together. And then mountain biking is really its own world.
It really is. I mean, from, you know, just to reiterate the difference, mountain bikers, they live in their own world. They have their own language about suspensions, the way that cyclocross riders do about their tire widths, that I'm still trying to parse. But anyway, the mountain bike world, very insular.
Yeah, to the point that if you listen to the first year that Vanderpool showed up, and I think it was even this Novomesto race, and that's the one where I really had this interaction with him that was great, is that if you listen to the broadcast, you got Bart Brenschens talking, and he is a former world champ. He's also Dutch.
Yeah.
And legend. He has no idea who Matthew Vanderpool is. Who's Dutch?
Yeah.
That's where I was like, this guy is, this is such a different world that they don't even care. So Vanderpool comes out in this race in Novomesto, you know, comes,
it's like starting back row, isn't he?
Starting in the back row. And unlike Sagan, he wasn't like starting like 20 feet in the back row. He's like in it and trying to get in the front row before like the gun goes off. Like, you know, he has not been in the back row in so long that it does not compute with him. So he's getting to the front. Result is he eats it within 10 seconds of the race start on asphalt at high speed, just complete yard sale, like
skin and the snarkiness and was
bike everywhere.
Yeah, the snarkiness of the mountain bike community at that moment was like, oh, this guy.
Yeah,
right. Like this is who we're supposed to be worried about.
Picks himself up, wipes himself off, hauls ass, catches the back. Within two laps, he is like chasing down the leaders, and then he crashes again, hard, like eats it hard. Gets up. Gets back on his bike and ends up like in the top 10.
Yeah, I think he got like seventh or something.
Yeah.
It was enough that you're like, oh, he got some points so he can move up one or two rows in the
right,
start.
Exactly.
Now.
and people were like, whoa, okay. Well, that was a little fluky, but that's cool. Not fluky the rider, but just a fluke.
Yeah.
And after that race, you know, I was like, oh my God, that was an amazing performance by Vanderpool. And I'm walking around and I see, and it's like, it's not even a Baobank camper. It's just like his own camper, you know, and he's just sitting out there and he's like sitting on the step and
just
he's got
by
like, you know, his family around. He's just sitting there and he's icing his elbow and it's sort of bleeding. And I'm looking around. I'm like, there's no one here. This is Matthew Vanderpool. Like nobody, if you went to a cyclocross race, you would never see this. And I was like, hey, how's it going? Do you got a couple minutes to talk? And he was like, I'm not doing anything else.
I love this.
And it was like, great. So we sat down and chatted, you know, I got him on camera, did a little interview, and it was awesome, you know, and he was super nice. And, you know, he was absolutely disappointed. You know, even then he was pissed off because he thought he could win that race. You know,
yeah.
First time in a World Cup mountain bike race, and he's pissed off because he didn't beat Nino Scherter. So yeah. that sort of tells you the mindset of Vanderpool. So we go through that, and then the next, I think it was either next, or possibly next or two races, but I think it was the next race was Alpstadt. It was 2017 in Alpstadt. And talking about Fluky, he was up there, but then crashed into a tree. And then it's him and it's like Vanderpool and Nino, and they are battling it out. And again, Vanderpool, it comes down to him not being familiar with mountain biking. And he's, you know, using the same kind of that same skill and speed that he has in cyclocross. And it doesn't always translate that well. And he eats it again, you know.
Yeah.
He's on
Scherter's
wheel and he eats it and he comes in. He's still able to get back, but he gets second place. And this is the moment that everybody is like, holy cow, who is this? Where did he come from? And I just remember like that night, it was working for Trek, you know, one of the Alvaro's, the Spanish mechanic, and he was like off like all night with all of the other Spanish mechanics, and all they were talking about was Vanderpool. Like that was all anybody could talk about, like after that race.
Yeah.
And the thing that I put up on Twitter, which was just amazing, was he comes across second place, and you know, it's unlike what you see, I'm sure it happens in road, but mountain biking is such an industry driven thing. So all the reps are there, all the industry is there, you know, from bikes,
yeah,
clothing and just everything, you know, and he crosses the line and this guy, you know, this known rep comes, so it's just running up and there is going, oh, that was amazing. It was great, great win. You know, I see you have X product, you know, I'd love to get you set up with us. And Vanderpool's just
like,
kinda,
oh, congratulations, you got second. Now yeah, I'll talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just kind of looking at the guy and not really saying anything. And one of his, you know, and I can't remember who was, I'm pretty sure his manager was there at the time. Well, I know it was. And his manager like looks at the guy, he goes, well, you know, we contacted you before he started mountain biking, and we weren't looking for any money, but we wanted to use your product, and you told us that you weren't interested, that you know, you didn't know a rider, you didn't want to help us out. And this guy, you know this end of it, Tim, the salesman, keeping it positive, moving forward, he's like, oh, no way, that wasn't me, you know, I'm sorry, you know, it was probably somebody else at the office who didn't realize, you know, how great Matthew Vanderpool is. And as he's, you know, giving his spiel, like the manager's just sitting there on his phone. He's not even acknowledging him. He's just scrolling on his phone. He finally like stops, turns his phone around and shows it to him. He's like, is that your name on the email? And the guy just sort of looks at it and he goes, yeah, I think we're good here. And then they just walk away. And it was like,
oh my God, that's so good.
It was the greatest takedown ever.
The only thing that would have made it better is if he would have like, no, this is the number I called, and he calls that number at that moment, and then it starts ringing in the guy's pocket. So Matthew Vanderpool doing the mountain bike thing, I mean, it was so good. And then my favorite part of the story, which you've conveniently left out, is how he recognized you in the scrum to be like, oh, hey, Bill. And then, because now all of a sudden everyone wants to talk to him.
Yeah. And it's always, and that's where, honestly, I mean, sure, it feels good, but it's why I just absolutely love the guy. You know, it's like I sort of had this, you know, got to know him a little early, and I was like the only photographer, because the mountain biking, you know, that was another thing. Like me, I finally got to the point where I could talk to like some other photographers, but they're their own little world too. And as opposed to like the cyclocross photographer world. So breaking into that was just this weird thing. But yeah, Vanderpool be doing his practice laps. Everybody's there and like the, you know, figuring out their spots where they're going to take photos or shoot video. And he'd always come through and he'd be like, hey, Bill. And they would just look at me like, what is that?
Like who? I mean, oh, so good. Now, Spencer and I were talking on the pod about who the happiest man in cycling is right now.
Yeah.
And we had different opinions.
Okay.
So I argued that Wout Van Aert is the happiest man in cycling right now for two reasons. One is that, you know, now everything that he's like the crap he's been putting up with his entire life is now on a, known on a worldwide stage of cycling.
Yeah.
Right. And also the conversation that Vanderpool needs to stop racing cyclocross and, you know, some team can just come in and buy his services just for the road. So that would free up Wout Van Aert to become the king once again in cyclocross. Spencer argued that the happiest man in cycling is Nino Schurter because now there's no way that Matthew Vanderpool is going to continue with this mountain bike odyssey. And so who do you think is the happiest man in cycling with Matthew Vanderpool winning Amstel Gold?
Well, I like the Wout Van Aert thing. And the thing that, you know, everybody is always like, you know, oh, it's like Polador and Anquety, you know, it's the interminable second place. Wout Van Aert has three world championships. He's one of the greatest cyclocross racers ever.
And he won like races against Matthew Vanderpool in winning fashion that are not like fluky.
No.
Right?
In what I think cyclocross fans would say true cyclocross conditions.
God. Yeah.
So yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. And I love that storyline that he's just back in the pack. Because I think that the difference is in there is that Wout Van Aert has done everything right to be a respected road racer.
He's having a great season.
He's come in. He's done the work. He's gained the respect of his team. He's become this team leader. It doesn't seem like there's any friction there. Like Van Poppel seems to be like, this is the strongest guy. But he's still working for him. You know, they're working for each other. He's covering brakes. He's doing everything that he's supposed to do as a conventional road racer. And then Vanderpool just shows up and he's like, I got Johnny here. Vermeersch. He's going to support me. And then we're just going to go have some fun and win some races.
It's like Kevin Durant, right?
Yeah.
He's still always going to be second to LeBron. If it wasn't for LeBron, Kevin Durant would go down. He's arguably the greatest of all time.
He's not even thought of this best player on his own team right now. Cause he's got like Steph Curry, you know, it's like, yeah.
So, man. So you think he's the happiest?
Yeah. I just think Wout's got a good life and he's cool with it. And now he's like, but I think you're absolutely right in that Wout doesn't have a Vanderpool problem anymore. Road cycling has a Vanderpool problem. So he's been able to like sort of shift that over. He's like, look, guys, I mean, I love it. It's what you guys, you know, it's what the Slow Ride Twitter feed is always like. I told you this was going to happen. Yeah. You know, he crashes and you're like, he's going to be back. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
My comparison was that, do you remember the, did you ever see the movie, Amadeus?
Yes, but for reasons that a seventh grade boy would watch Amadeus.
So the main storyline of Amadeus is that, you know, there's this young prodigy phenom, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who can just like write these amazing pieces of music just on a whim without even seeming to try. And then there is what starts out to be his mentor, and then his nemesis is Salieri, who's just killing himself to create great music and is like working 20 hours a day and putting all of this time in and doing everything the way it's supposed to be done.
And
Mozart's out there drinking and carousing and just living life. You know, if it's Vanity, he's riding dirt bikes. He's out there at a BMX track after winning a race. He's, you know, in his Porsche, you know, he's just having the time of his life and winning races. It was like,
that's a good,
yeah. Vanderpool is Amadeus. Yeah. Wout is Salieri.
That's really good. And it's also really highbrow. I'm happy that you, you know, brought the level of this podcast up to that, you know, I mean, that's good. Now I think Vanderpool, like he had like the Instagram feed photo or whatever of him, like driving a backhoe like a heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Did you say, like, those are the types of things he's doing where Wout van Aert right now is probably studying his numbers.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, how long will he be allowed to keep this up? Let's predict the future a little bit. I need you to put on your hat here, because it's coming. Like, are we going to be able to enjoy this moment for a long time? Or is it just going to be one more season? Is it going to be just to the Olympics? At what point is he only going to be on the road? Because at the end of the day, that's where the money is, unless you're Nino. And he can be Nino. So he may be able to have the power to do whatever he wants. Like, what do you foresee for the next year, 5 years?
I'm going to answer that, Tim. But first, I need to ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you have life insurance?
Oh, I do. And I know quite a lot of things about life insurance.
Yeah.
And
because you're a dad.
You need it.
You're a dad.
I'm a dad. Yeah. I had a stroke.
You had a stroke. So,
which can come out of nowhere, which means that you should probably have life insurance. I didn't expect to have one. Thank God I had life insurance. And thank God there's good doctors.
Yeah. Do you know how easy it is to get life insurance? And not only life insurance, but the lower rates on life insurance?
It's super easy.
Yeah?
And Health IQ, the longtime Wide Angle Podium sponsors are back. Go to healthiq.com/WAP and they have all the info for you.
It's a pretty cool system too, because they're numbers based, and it's not just, you know, we've talked a lot about in this show about conventional wisdom and what's been done in the past and to lead to success. And these are sort of these, you know, Silicon Valley tech nerds that started a life insurance company, and they basically said, all right, we want to make sure that we are investing in the best risks, and we think that other than, you know, these sort of conventional tests that life insurance companies do, we can do this better. So we want to get a more of a whole view of the people that we sell life insurance to, and we want them to be healthy people. And they came to us because they're like, hey, cyclists, these are healthy people. And so they, you know, first off, just to qualify, they give you a little quiz, which was fun. I mean, I aced it. How'd you do?
I aced it.
Yeah. Perfect.
I mean, I'm an expert, as you said earlier.
Exactly.
It's super simple, right? So, and it's a good way to save money and also to get you thinking about being an adult.
Yep. That's the biggest thing. You're doing this not just for you, but for the rest of our, I've looked at the demographics of both of our shows, Tim.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much the people who should be worrying about that. We don't have a lot of those 18 and 19 year old kids who are checking in.
Yeah. And that's just the simple part. At some point you need to be an adult and get life insurance. What better way to do it than to work with a company that supports things that you like, recognizes what you do and how you're a healthier individual because you're riding bikes, you enjoy bikes, and then, you know, rewarding you for all that. To me, it's a no-brainer.
So. Yeah. So do us yourself a favor. Also do us a favor here at the shows. We'd love to just to look and see what it's all about. If you could go to healthiq.com/WAP, fill out the quiz, you know, see, again, you just at least do that first exploration into life insurance. And again, by doing that, you're helping yourself. You're also helping us here at the Wide Angle Podium Network. All right, Tim, how long is this going to go on? That's the question, right?
Yeah. And how long is it going to go on? And subset of that, what do you think the next year to 5 years look like? You know, like benchmarks here for the Vanderpool experience.
I love that now that he's had this breakthrough, won a monument, everybody is saying, okay.
It's not a monument.
All right.
But
I'm sorry. It's not the Japan Cup.
It's not the Japan Cup, but it's a major classic.
It is a Dutch monument. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. We haven't even gotten to that yet. His dad won this race. The amount of pressure he had on him for being the Dutch national champion in this race is huge.
Yeah.
And he came through. But anyways, I digress.
I it's a little humorous now seeing the road racing experts, the, you know, the grown-ups in the room, as I like to say, you know, telling this cyclocross phenom enough with the kid stuff. You're not a little boy anymore. You need to grow up. You need to put the dirt bikes away and playing in the mud and jumping over the hurdles. That all needs to just be put away. You've shown you're a road racer. Obviously, you know, under our tutelage as road race fans, you can learn more and really become a good road racer because we're the experts and this is the direction you need to go. So
those are the worst people.
Let's get rid of the Olympic dreams and mountain bike because, hey, look, you could win now. I mean, that's just, it's a novelty. It's not real bike racing, but look, why not do the road race in the Olympics? You're already the Dutch national champ. I'm sure you could qualify. Then you could win something that actually means something. So let's just put
it's time
away
for
these
you
mountain
to get
bikes.
A real job. Sorry. Yeah, it's time, for you to get a real job.
Get a real job, kid. You know, let's get serious. If you want to be a bike racer, let's get serious. So that's the first thing that I hear. And then that's always followed up with, well, you know, the real money's in road racing. So he's going to have to go to, that's part of the get a real job part. You know, he's got to go over to road racing if he's going to make the real money. And this is where people don't really understand the phenomenon of Matthew Vanderpoel. He is a guy who I believe, and I could be wrong, it could be a little less, pretty sure he already makes seven figures. And that was the deal. And I heard about this in the mountain biking world when people were like, oh, they want to sign him to a mountain bike team. And I actually heard this from several managers, is they couldn't do it because they couldn't afford him. And now that he's, you know, and he switched, he was on Stevens bikes. They're now on Canyon bikes, and that was a huge move for him because now he has a legit road bike, legit cyclocross bike, legit mountain bike. And, you know, much like what we see with Sagan, he's got a sponsor there that's willing to support him wherever he goes. So that was huge for him. Plus, Corendon has very little, you know, and this is a Dutch, I think, or Belgian bank. And they don't care. They're like, do what you're going to do. I think they have one race that they sponsor that they need him to race. And other than that, they're like, go be Matthew Vanderpoel. And they pay him to be Matthew Vanderpoel. And like, he's not going to do that if he's like on some world tour team that he's not going to walk in as the leader. He's just going to be carrying water. He's not going to make that. So that's a ridiculous argument as well.
So the money argument isn't what's going to do it.
Right.
Is what you're saying. And clearly Canyon's got a lot of money behind him. The video that they produced where it's just Matthew Vanderpoel and his dad.
Yeah.
No mention of the other child.
Poor David.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know his name. quick side street.
Yeah.
Departure. What's the better group of brothers in cycling? So we have the Yates brothers, we have the Quintero, or Nairo and Dyer brothers, right?
Yep.
We have the Vanderpoels, we have the Sagans, and we have the Izaguirres. Mm. We have five quality groupings of brothers.
Such a roadie. Such a roadie.
Am I missing others?
The Swix.
Oh, the Swix. Yes, embarrassing.
So Tim, this was the matchup that I watch every year and finally wanted to come to fruition. And the Vanderpoels won this year. The Vanderpoels won hands down this year, but it's just the family competition between the Vanderpoels and the Swix. Because for a while there, Lauren Swick was up there with Matthew Vanderpoel. Yes,
you're absolutely right.
But the race that I always watch, and I would check the standings to see who won between David Vanderpoel and Dieter Swick. And that for me is the bigger competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where the fun is. All right, let's get back on the main street. I forgot about the brother. I just wanted to bring him up that there is another Vanderpoel.
If we're going to want, I got my side street for you.
Okay.
Here's something that I've been thinking about. Back in the dark days of road cycling, the secret to success. And we're just going to put aside the other more secretive secrets to success. But what we heard publicly that the secret to success, especially for amateur riders, if you wanted to be able to climb, if you wanted to be able to win road races, was having a cadence of 90 RPMs, right?
Yes.
That was it.
Yes.
Hit that 90, that's what you need to strive for, and then you're going to be winning. My hypothesis now, just in the last couple of days, because I'm seeing it across the board, that all of these long training miles and all of this preparation just kind of burns you out and doesn't set you up anymore now for road season. That cyclocross, now I'm being told, is the way to compete and to win on the road. So is cyclocross the new 90 RPM cadence?
Oh, wow. That right there is the little guy argument forever, right? Is that cyclocross is really the proper way to train for the spring classic season and the whole year.
Yeah.
Like his whole thing
he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, he was way ahead that they're hitting peak performance and yeah, they can shut it down during the Giro and then come back and still do well, you know, July on. So very it should be. I like that side street. That's really good.
All right.
But we know money isn't going to be the thing that stops him from doing what he does.
I honestly think he likes having fun. I think, you know, when I got the chance to talk to him this past summer, he wants to race downhill. He wants to do it all. I mean, the guy is just like, what's out there? What's the next challenge? You know, I've been reading a lot of these, I saw Free Solo and sort of just got stuck in the whole, you know, mountain climbing world here for a little while. And like with all those guys, it's always like, what's the next big challenge? What can we do? How can we prove ourselves? And I sort of see Vanderpool in that. It's like, you know,
wasn't Voss like this? What didn't Voss go to do some mountain biking for a while with the quest to go for the gold there?
Yeah, I think, and I think that, you know, even look at Ferran Prevost, same thing. But I just love that Vanderpool's even like a step beyond that. And like, I'm sure if he had the opportunity to go race Enduro, he'd be awesome at that. Like, you know, it'd give him a couple times and then he could do something like that. And that's why you just have to just love.
So the enjoyment is there.
Yeah, like the enjoyment is there. But on the other side, there's still this seriousness. There's still, you know, I don't know if you saw like his latest.
He wants to win.
Yeah. Instagram. It's like, you know, race until it's your last breath. You know, that was like his thing. And then, you know, the criticism that he always gets in cyclocross, that he's not making it fun anymore, that he's too far ahead of his races. And my favorite quote ever from him was, I get paid to win bike races.
And he gets paid a lot.
Yeah. And so he's not like, I'm not out here to make this like, a fun competition for everyone to watch. If those guys get better, then they can be up here with me. But right now I'm out here to kick ass and win bike races.
So here's an argument on why he should stop doing these, you know, and get a real job of road racing is to get entry into the bigger races, right? Like get on a real team. And I think he's in probably one of the most enviable positions right now, because like you said, he has these non-endemic sponsors to the cycling world that just want him to have fun and get out there to do their thing, that races are going to want him in there.
Yeah.
Like Spencer brought up, there's no way Paris-Roubaix is going to not invite his team next year to the race.
Right.
They would be idiotic not to. Like he brings an entire nation of ratings to the television channel. And so that whole argument, I think, is a little bit null and void because he's not a Grand Tour rider yet.
You say yet. I don't know. I mean, this is just all guessing, but I just don't. It doesn't seem like that really holds appeal to him.
Yeah.
You know,
downhill
going back
would be
to like
way cooler.
going back to like the mountain biking, mountain climbing stuff. I mean, there's like these two guys, like Tommy Caldwell and Alex Honnold. Honnold is like the Free Solo guy. You know, he wants to do things he knows how to do and do them better than anybody else. I mean, that was the whole thing about Free Solo. He was like without ropes in 4 hours, he's climbing up El Capitan. He wants no part of like these 2 weeks, you know, huge epic climbs on these great things. That's not him. And I see Vanderpool kind of the same way. I don't know if he really wants to sit there for 3 weeks and race in the Tour de France. Maybe he does, but it just doesn't seem like that's his gig.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it to me, I don't think he's going to do it just because it's, like you said, it's not his gig. B, why does he need to, right? Go win.
But you think, like, but here's what is he if he does? Is he like, you know, I mean, you look at, we've always heard about Sagan that he's not like a true sprinter, yet he wins the green jersey every year just because he's, you know, smart. And he's sort of like Vanderpool. He was a freelancer forever, just sort of floating. He killed my Pataki train. So is Vanderpool that kind of rider? I mean, is he going in there, if he does do a tour, is it to like win the green jersey?
Oh, I don't know. It'd be so much fun to watch either way. Like, I do want to see this experiment take place 1 year. Like, yeah. Is he a breakaway?
Oh, so
like, is he the new Jens Voigt? Like,
yeah.
Does he go after the green jersey? Does he go for stage wins? I mean, I still don't know what his full sprint capabilities are, right? With like trains and all that. That would be fun to see him like bounce around, little Robbie McEwen action. Would he just sit on the back of, you know, the Michael Matthews of the world just to pimp him at the line? So yeah, there's a lot there. I'm wondering how long it takes for really, really, really big, like life altering money to come in beyond seven figures to say, like, sky money to come in and say, this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh, that's like, like I'm hitting my number like right now. Right. I can do what you tell me to do for 3 years. And that's the only fear I see right now, because I like his, you know, screw the world approach that I'm just going to have fun. I mean, just watching him in a cyclocross race, Bill, the way he throws his bike around, it's got to be a nightmare for my favorite, you know, cyclocross book author out there that tells me how to properly carry a bike over a barrier. Right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the biggest rule you can follow is that if you're fast doing it, do it. You know, I know Myerson would disagree with me there, because he's always like, well, if he did it right, he could be faster. I'm like, I'm not going to tell him. But even with that, you know, that was the other thing talking about him. It was kind of like, was it boring? Just winning all the time? I mean, it's a dumb, you know, it's sort of a crappy question, but he's like, he still has fun racing cyclocross bikes. He just has fun doing it. So he's not going to stop, you know, or so he says.
Next year at this time, after the spring classic season, let's just assume he gets invited to Liège, Bastogne Liège next year. He's not going to be there this week. Where are we going to be a year from now? Like, what?
I think that you have to go 2 years. I think you have to go 2 years. Because assuming that the cycling road experts on Twitter don't convince him and educate him into why doing the road race at the Olympics is more important than the mountain bike race, I think we have to look after 2020 and the Olympics, if that truly is the goal. He stated that's the goal. You know, he's going to qualify.
It's going to be his goal. And that's, by the way, he has a very good chance to win a gold medal there in a sport that is only gaining steam. Like, mountain biking is clearly on the upswing more and more. The coverage that we're seeing from Red Bull has been fantastic to bring it to more households around the country. And then also, we know that the mountain bike race at the Olympics is must-see television. The last two editions have been fantastic. Ratings have been good. And that is the pinnacle of the mountain bike sport. So if there's anybody that can really take advantage of that, it's going to be the Matthew Vanderpool versus Nino Schurter battle.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think you got other guys in there. I mean, I think there's some good parity in there, which is why
this is why you're the expert.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's the thing that I think we are all looking forward to for the World Cup season, as opposed to maybe cyclocross, is that Vanderpool still hasn't won that World Cup race in the XCO, as people, you know, actuallys will tell you. Well, he's beaten, you know, Schurter, and he has on several occasions in short track, and that's true, and I believe he will continue to do that because that's kind of ready-made for him. But in that XCO race, he still hasn't broken through on the top step. I think there are going to be 4 or 5 guys. I mean, Schurter's not getting younger. I think he's kind of coming back to the pack a little bit, and there, all these young guys are moving up to him, that this is going to be the most exciting season we've seen in quite some time on the men's side for XCO racing. We were already seeing it on the women's side, and I think there's just going to be like, I'm a little disappointed that I'm not going to be in Europe to be able to see this live. But can I tell you how stoked I am to actually to be able to sit down and watch this Red Bull coverage while it happens for the first time in 3 years? And to have Vanderpool right up there with them. I am so looking forward to this mountain biking season because of that.
It's going to be great. So the mountain biking is going to happen. Like, let's assume he's going to the Olympics.
Yep.
What's in his hardware case at this point? Is he going to have the gold medal at the Olympics?
I can't say that he's going to have the gold medal, but he's definitely going to be on the podium. And I think he's going to be disappointed if he doesn't have the gold. He's got as good a chance as anybody, I believe.
Okay. So he's going to have some hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Will he have like a monument win? Like a Roubaix, a Flanders, Lombardia, Japan Cup, Milan San Remo?
I don't think Milan San Remo.
Yeah.
I think that it's kind of interesting because his skill set, I think he'd be a really good at Roubaix.
Oh yeah.
Because he's so good at just putting his head down and powering, and especially, you know, he's kind of used to that rough terrain. I think like going over cobbles and stuff, and those cobbles. Yeah, I mean, he's got it. He's got it all there. I mean, he could do well in Flanders too, but I think that it's so hard to say is he going to win one of these, but I think that knowing his rise so far, yes, I'll say yes, he's going to win. He's going to win one of the Northern Classics.
Okay, maybe Liège or whatever.
Yep.
And then so in the next 2 years, we will see him be on the podium in the Olympics for mountain biking. Mm-hmm. We'll see him do quite well continued in the road spring season. Do you feel that we're going to see him on the top step again at Cyclocross Worlds?
I think that even though I think he does, I think that in his competitive nature, my guess would be 2 world championships isn't enough. He needs at least one more.
Wow. And then he's going to have to get that also. He could also maybe get that from mountain biking. But
no, I think that, no, just three elite cyclocross.
Wow. I see what you're saying.
World
okay.
championships. Then he matches Wout, right? So I think that another little, dagger in Wout's side there.
So here's one for you. Is he going to... Would cyclocross, in your opinion, is going to be the first discipline to go? So it will be road and mountain bike. He's going to Bo Jackson the sport of road and mountain bike. Deion Sanders, he's not going to cross will be the first to go, I'm assuming, right?
I'd almost say mountain bike will be the first to go.
Okay. That's good to know. It's nice that he's going to stick to his roots.
Yeah, I hope that he sticks with it for a while, but I feel like, especially he's what, like 24 now, 25. We see this with these younger guys where they can actually race year round. Eventually, you can't do that anymore. You know, that was basically what you're saying. So something has to go. And I think that with his support, and I think he nails mountain biking in the next couple of years. And once he solves that problem, I think he moves back to cyclocross and road.
Okay. So I've got a couple of other questions for you.
All right.
When's the next time we'll see Matthew Vanderpoel racing in the United States?
Oh, man. You know this. Like, I am...
Canada.
I am lobbying so hard. I'm like, it sets up so perfect. He could do world championship in Mount St. Anne. Yeah. Next week, he could do the final World Cup in snowshoe.
Oh, my God. West Virginia?
Yeah, nice leisurely drive to Madison. Do track. Go do Jingle. Hang out. Do Charm City, DCCX. And then head back.
We could give him so many great
tips
for an American road trip.
But here's the thing. And you know, I know Simon Burney has already told me that that's a pipe dream and it's not happening. But... if you talked to Vanderpool in the past. And one of the reasons that he said that he didn't come this year and he doesn't like coming to North America, he's got nothing against North America. For him, he says it's not a long enough trip to make it worth his while. Now he has a month of four of the biggest events on his calendar, if he chooses, right? He's got three World Cups and a World Championship in North America consecutively.
Oh, then he could win the World Cup of cyclocross too. Because the reason he didn't win it this year is because he didn't show up to the U.S. events.
Yeah.
So that's really good. I think we need to come up with a campaign.
Yeah.
For this, because he's a fan of the people. He's a man of the people. Okay, so you think
we
this
need
year?
We need to have a crowd funded. We need to get as many people as we possibly can to go to Madison for a track, and then we can through some just community osmosis, we can convince Vanderpool also to be there.
You know, I like the idea of the road trip. Like, that to me is must see TV.
Yeah.
Like, we'd have to find the right
road
driver
diaries.
For him.
I mean, just Road Diaries with Matthew Vanderpool and David in the bus.
He could go see Spencer in Columbus. He'd go through Chicago to hang out with Luke and the gang, then go to Madison to hang out with us at the World Cup. Okay. That's great idea. I was thinking that at worst case scenario, the next time we'll see him is probably 2022 at the race in Arkansas.
Right.
Maybe at the foam party again. He'll make a return.
Yeah.
Now, the bigger question. 2023. This is 4 years away. Bear with me here. Glasgow, Scotland is going to have the World Cycling Championships where single event, BMX, mountain bike, downhill, road, everything except cyclocross,
right,
I think, is going to be there. Track. How many disciplines will Matthew Vanderpool be racing over the 2 weeks that is the Glasgow World Cycling Championships?
That's a great question. That's something we need to ask him.
Like, this could be amazing. We could see him on the mountain bike, and then the next week on the road, and then he's like, I'm going to do the kilo.
Like, remember when Deion Sanders, didn't he
played, he's in like the World Series, right? And then it was like...
Yeah, World Series, and then he like went to a Falcons game or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the same day.
Regular season. Yeah, it's kind of like how IndyCar drivers also go to North Carolina for the Coca-Cola 6.
Yeah.
And this could be good. Like, this, I think we need to start putting this on our radar. Like, not even calling it the World Cycling Championships. Just call it the Matthew Vanderpool Training Camp.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he wants to ride track bikes. And there's got to be a way for him to get a instant upgrade on BMX,
right?
Like,
it's
bikes.
And Tim, it's right back to the whole mountain climbing thing. You know, like, these guys now have gotten so good that it's just like one peak in a day isn't enough. So now they're just trying to string together as many as they can, or like as many, you know, routes up one climb as possible, and they'll get to the top, run down, do it again. You know, type of thing, where it used to take people like weeks to do it once. Like, that's the Vanderpool challenge. Like, one world championship, that in a day? Anybody
if
can
he
do
could,
that.
If you could win two, if you could win two world championships in the course of a week, that'd be amazing, right?
Yeah.
But just lining up in like, put it this way, if he lined up for three disciplines, I'd be in awe.
Oh, if, yeah. You know, you use the mountain bike as the openers for the road.
Oh God, it'd be so good.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I get so excited. This has like been the best hour and a half that I've had in a while. And I thought last week was good with Spencer.
So we need to table this discussion here, Tim. And then I'd love for us to pick this because, again, you know, and I know with the Slow Ride podcast, and if you all are not members of the Wide Angle Podium Network, you should be. You can go to wideanglepodium.com, just click on the donate button, and then click on the level that you want, and then it'll take you to all the shows that you can support. You know, this show's up here, the YouTube shows are up there, and the Slow Ride podcast. I know that the Slow Ride podcast is you all have your agenda, you have an outline, you have all of the stuff you're going to say all mapped out before the show. We're a little more loosey-goosey here. So I like that we came in with the Blame Pine, had a couple little other set pieces, but then it was a good, it was good just to riff.
It was. It felt good. And the best part was, I appreciate you not pointing out that I am close to last place in roller derby. You called me an expert earlier, but I am so far down.
I put a hundred on Vanderpool to win Amstel.
You're a smart man.
I jumped up to like 85th.
I think you're you are. But so here's one of the things I wanted to go. I don't know if you noticed, but if you go to who won, like roller derby, it's our favorite fantasy cycling game. ROULEURDERBY.com. It's a member of the Wide Angle Podium Network. Check it out. It's fantasy cycling at its finest, but here's the best part. Someone for the Amstel Gold proposition. So who will win Amstel Gold? It's a very basic prop. Matthew Vanderpool won. He went off at a 4-1 odds. So every point you won, every point you bet, you got 4 back. The biggest winner on the who will win Amstel Gold? A gentleman by the name of Wout van Aert put 1,000 points on Matthew Vanderpool at 4-1. Like, this is my favorite thing. Like, someone's screen name was Wout van Aert, and they put 1,000 points on Vanderpool to win. And what's crazy is, I was like, oh, I got to look at this profile. Like, how often has Wout van Aert bet? Is this just a one-time only thing to just really skew? No. Wout van Aert's actually been gambling quite a bit in internet points. You know, put 25 on Wout to show at Paris-Roubaix. Failed, you know. They put 10 on Gilbert to win Paris-Roubaix at 35-1. They won there. So, like, they have a pretty good track record.
He is the Pete Rose of roller derby.
Yeah, but Wout van Aert put 1,000. And it was just... And the... it's so good. It was my favorite thing. And great. It was I so good.
Hey, speaking of roller derby, another show that you and Spencer are doing, a little outshoot of the slow ride, Let It Ride. You guys are doing just a sort of breakdown using that expertise that you're. Maybe you should get a Wout van Aert on there as a guest to sort of tell his strategy for
his
for
strategies. It's a fun little show. We're trying to do it just to bring some attention to roller derby. What Luke has created there is a coding. Shangri-La, it's a coding genius, and it should be rewarded just by your eyeballs. But then to get along and just play in our weird little corner of the internet where we think cycling is the most important thing in the world, this is what better way to put your internet reputation where your mouth is by clicking on a couple buttons to put points on bets. It's a lot of fun. So
flesh
is around the corner. And then so anyways, check out the show, Let It Ride. It's on the Slow Ride feed if you want. And that'd be great if people want to listen. And so thanks for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing that I would love for people to do as well, also part of the Wide Angle Podium, is for mountain bike season. I've started a show on YouTube called MTB Heat Check.
And... talk about burying the lead, Bill. I'm sorry here. I'm going to interrupt.
But you
the greatest intro,
yeah.
The greatest video intro of all time. Thank you for that. Your coverage of Sea Otter was so well received because I didn't see any other coverage of Sea Otter's bike racing. And that is some good work. That is, I've clicked subscribed on YouTube. I've watched, I've gone deep into your back catalog of videos from your channel.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good ones there. But the mountain bike heat check, I am very excited to see where this thing goes.
Yeah, so actually, as soon as we get off on this call, I'm going to finish editing up the first edition of the MTB heat check power rankings.
Oh,
so that good. That should be out either, in the next few days. So yeah, go to youtube.com/cxhairs. Go and just click subscribe on that. And that helps me a ton to keep pushing out these videos.
Oh, it's so good.
Tim, if people wanted to follow you or the show or anything, any other information like that, what should they do?
At the Slow Ride Pod is where Spencer, Little Guy, and myself still are. Little Guy still has the keys to the Twitter castle, so every now and then he's on there. And You can also follow me personally at the Super Rookie if you want some Orlando bike gossip. But other than that, you know, just hit us up at the Slow Ride Pod.
Awesome. It was great having you here. And for me, you can get in touch with the show at feedback@cxhairs.com. Also, can follow along on Instagram and on Twitter at cxhairs. And we will see you next time on Cyclocross Radio. See you later, Cyclocross friends.